Now you have done three phases. You've done admission, submission, and restitution. Now we go into the fourth phase, which is construction. Here is where we construct our life. You live on the last three. Now, isn't that simple? I don't have to live on 12 steps. I only got three that I have to be concerned about. The 10th, 11th, and 12th. The 10th step is another inventory step, but it has absolutely nothing to do with step 4, which also is an inventory step, but it's a different kind. Step 4 says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. It don't say that in this step 10. Just notice this continuing, it says continue to take a personal inventory. That's not a moral inventory, it's a personal, and it says something else. And when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Boy, there's a squeaker for you. When did we ever admit we're wrong? An alcoholic won't admit anything. He won't admit it's raining outside. It might involve him in something. Or the sun's shining out here. Don't admit it. Don't say anything. Keep your peace. Keep your peace. If you don't believe that, I don't know if I said this before around here, but I don't suppose any of you people ever been in court. But I think you ought to go down some Monday morning to your municipal court. Because you're paying those birds down there, you ought to find out what they're doing with your money. And you get down there, and Monday's a good day to go, because over the weekend, the gendarme has picked up a lot of drunks and thrown them in a tank, and so Monday morning, they come up before the judge. So here comes this rummy up before the judge in the morning, and he's standing there like this, you know, he's trying to shake this drunk out since Saturday night or Friday night or whenever they picked him up. And he is sick, and he's scared, and he's got the shakes and the shivers and what have you. And the bailiff reads off all these things that he did. He went driving while intoxicated. He sideswiped a police car. He went through a plate glass window and got out and fought the police. A few more things happened, and he landed in the cooler, in the drunk tank. So the bailiff reads all this stuff off, and the judge looks at this donkey sitting and standing in front of him, that rummy. He says, "You were drunk." "No. Oh, no, 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 not me." "Well, you were drinking." Well, after a lot of that hassle, this rummy will finally break down and admit to having had a couple of beers. You look out for these guys that drink a couple of beers or a menace. I never heard of any guy getting in trouble drinking whiskey. But those guys with a couple of beers, they are world beaters. So there we are. That's admittance. Don't ever admit anything. Don't admit it, never. That's a cardinal rule for rummy. But here we are. We're admitting things. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admit it. Now let me explain this. The 10th step is a check on my daily life, and I'll tell you how I do mine, because I have to have a simple program. I'm not smart enough to have these complicated programs that people learn about in these dry-out joints, and these psychiatrists teach them. I have to have something simple, because I'm a simple guy. And I have a very great lack of education. So I don't know any five-syllable words or anything like this, so let's get simple. So here's the way I do my 10th step. It says I continue to take personal inventory. What does that mean? This is a personal check on my daily life. What did I do today? They talk about day by day. You hear all these birds talking about a day at a time. Ask most people in an AA group what that means. They say, "I hope I say it's over a day at a time." Yeah, idiot. If you ever take these steps, don't ever say that. It's an insult. Forget it. You don't say sober a day at a time. You live a day at a time. That's a lot different than saying sober a day at a time. So it says we continue to take personal inventory. What is that? Here's the way I do mine. At night, my day is over with. And Grace and I always have prayer time at night. She has hers, I have mine. Sometimes we have it together. However, we have it. After this is concluded, I'm alone. I'm lying there in bed with my own thoughts. And I go over my day. And I analyze, where have I been today? What have I done? What's transpired? Who did I run into? Did I do anything worthwhile today? And if I have, I give myself a pat on the back. I say, "Oh boy, you get a star for that one." On the other hand, maybe I have abused you, or I owe you an apology, and I've insulted you. It says here, we promptly admitted. I have to come out and make my apologies to you right away. That's my first priority tomorrow morning. I can't wait till some time that's convenient for me, because the program insists that I promptly do it. If I don't do it promptly, it's not going to get done. And that procrastination will come back in that I got rid of once before. See? So that's promptly. I'll bet you, how many people here do that? You're always doing it now that you know better. So it says here, I continue to take personal inventory in my daily life every day. And when I'm wrong, I promptly admitted it. And we all make mistakes, kids. That's why they put rubbers on lead pencils. You're not going to live a blameless life. We all make mistakes. You can't help it. We're living in a society where we're with people. Life is earnest. Life is real. And there's more rascals around than there are the other type. So we got more opportunity of getting in trouble than we have of staying straight. You don't believe this? Think about your associates and tell me that I'm wrong. Okay. That's your tenth step. This is what keeps us straight every day. Keeps our life straight. Keeps us clean. Tenth step. Listen to this 11th step. This is a humdinger. A lot of words in it. It says in that 11th step that we're seeking something. It says, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. A lot of words. Let's break them down. I'm seeking something through prayer and meditation. What's the difference? What is prayer and what is meditation? Prayer is talking to my new manager. And meditation is listening to him. See? And I have observed that the good Lord gave me two ears and one mouth. That ought to suggest something to us. We should do some listening as well as talking. Maybe twice as much. If we don't listen for our orders, we're not going to get them. So it says in a good book, be still. Be still. And that's what we do in this 11th step. Be still and listen to Him talk to us. So I'm seeking something through prayer and meditation. What am I seeking? I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with God. Now, what does that mean? That means I have to keep selling myself the idea that He's right here. He's as close to me as you are. I can talk to Him, I can feel Him, I can get answers from Him. He's not way out in the blue yonder where He's inaccessible, where I used to think He was. He's right here. Remember the time those birds landed on the moon up there? Remember those first fellows that got on that moon and the guy jumped up there, the huge big leap for humanity? What did they do up there? They talked to Him up there. Remember that? They talked to Him on the moon. And we were talking to Him down here. So He really is accessible. I don't care where you are. Hey, you can't get away from Him. He's here. He's everywhere. So I sought through talking to Him and listening to Him to prove my conscious contact with Him. And I have to keep selling myself that He's here and not way out in the blue yonder. He's here. Then now it tells me what I'm praying for. Ask a lot of people in an AA group what they pray for. You know the answer you'll get? I pray for sobriety. Oh, slob them. You don't pray for sobriety. You have sobriety. Thank Him for it. We have a lot of things we can pray for. We got the one thing, we should pray for other people. We should pray for guidance and direction. We should never do anything without asking the Lord first His direction. And boy, you'll wind up in some of the funniest things sometimes by doing that. I know I was a salesman, and I'd have plans made to be a certain place at a certain time. When that time came, I wasn't there at all. I was somewhere else. And I had nothing to do with this. In retrospect, I can see with that place that I did wind up, I was supposed to be there. Eh? I tell you, the things that happened in my life, I could write books about it, and they were true. And not only my life, I see it in so many other people, too. I wish it could be in everyone's. It can be, if you will accept this. So there I am. I'm seeking through talking to Him and listening to Him. Faith comes through the spoken word. We speak this and we get faith. So it tells me what I'm praying for. What does it say? It doesn't say sobriety. It says praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry it out. What do you want me to do, boss? I'm your boy. You're my manager. Tell me what you want and give me the strength to do it.
Boy, he'll tell you what to do. I'm not kidding you. He'll put you in places. Places you never dreamed of being. I guarantee you. I'll promise you that. And I also know this. It tells me in the good book that he'll never put anything on me that he won't give me the power to execute. So what do you want me to do, boss? And give me the power to do it. He'll give it to you, boy, double. Believe me, you'll get it given to you. You might not like all the orders he gives you. You don't like all the orders from the boss gives you where you work either, but he pays you. And this boss you that got now pays you a lot better than he does. But remember that. So you got to do what he wants you to do. We are here to do service, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our new manager, praying only for knowledge or the will for us and the power to carry it out. Now what happens? Step 12. You hear so much about, I hear about 12 stepping. I'm going 12 stepping. I'm going 13 stepping. Another gal and I decided one time down at a retreat down in Texas to get a 14th step. I thought we needed a 14th step. So we got up a 14th step. Love them and leave them. Well, anyway, it says here something happened because we took these steps. Having had a spiritual experience, how did we get this spiritual experience? As the result of these steps. We took these steps, and as a result, we had a spiritual experience. And what is that? Pray tell. You'll hear people in AA say, come and change your thinking. Change your thinking? If we should think, we would never come here. It isn't your thinking. In Isaiah, it says the whole head is sick. And boy, our head is sick. This blubber of ours is when we get here, we're anything but well up here. We're very unwell. So, it says here, having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we took these steps and we had this change, this spiritual experience. And what was that? That's not a change here, not a change in your thinking. It's 14 inches lower. It's down here. See? That's where the change comes, down here. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me, I think I told some people here this, and I did. Bears repeating, because people forget about 90% of what you tell them anyway. When I was attending Oxford group meetings at T. Henry's home in Akron, there was a great big old boy there that took some kind of a shine to me, and he was a real great big rough character, this guy. And I was halfway scared of this bird, Bill Van Horn. Doc fished him out of a nut factory, and he came into the group, and he was stayed sober the rest of his life, and Bill used to think a lot of me for some reason, or I don't know why. I guess he collected old cats and dogs or something. But anyway, this was the way it was. And Bill always made a point of talking to me after meetings down there in Akron, in that Oxford group place. So he'd get me behind T. Henry's library table where I couldn't get away from him. And this big old bird used to tower over me like a moose. And he would talk to me, and as I say, I was half scared of this guy because he got out of a nut factory and he was such a big man and picking on me all the time. I didn't know what all of his designs might be. Well, anyway, one night he got me back at that table again. He said this to me. He says, Clarence, I'm going to give you the answer to this whole ball of wax. I'm going to give you something here, and I want you to read it. I want you to memorize it. I don't want you to ever forget it. This is the way we got suggestions in those days. So he takes his billfold out and starts unloading all this debris on the table there. And he's looking for something. He finally finds what he's looking for. It's a piece of paper, and he hands it to me. And I look at that piece of paper, and lo and behold, it's a Bible verse. And I look at that Bible verse, and I look at this big moose in front of me. Thought, well, maybe they let him out of that place too soon, you know? But I did what Bill told me to do. I read that, I reread it, and I reread it, and reread it. And it has become one of my very favorite verses. And you listen to this and see if this doesn't hit the nail right on the head. It's the 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter and the 17th verse. It reads this way. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. Think of that. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. All that old garbage is gone. We got rid of it in this 12-step program. We accepted God as our new manager. He took all this garbage away from us. It's laying back here. Old things are passed away, behold, all things are become new. After the seventh step, we've got a new tape to work on. That old tape is wiped out. How about that? Where can people go today? Really people, a lot of civilians. They don't have what you and I have. They don't have the opportunities you and I have. They're going to smolder and rust and do all this stuff, and very few of them ever have a chance. See, millions of them go to church every Sunday, and they're all going to hell. I mean it. What do they do? Don't think I don't know something about this, kids. You know, I'm a rummy, and when I get mixed up in anything, I go the whole way. No matter what I get into, I'm gone the whole way. They pick on me, and they make me do something, or I'm an easy mark or something. Because I know when I went into the American Legion, there's no time I'm an officer in the Legion. I'm the finance man looking after their dough. That is a dangerous thing. Then, I go into the lodge. I become an officer in the lodge. I leave there. I get talked into joining a church, much against my will. And I joined this church. My ex-wife got me into this. She had been in this church all her life. Her old man was a preacher in that church. And she had three brothers that were preachers and a couple of cousins of preacher in that denomination. And we wound up, they were going to organize a church in Florida. She reads that in the paper, nothing to do, we go down there. And here's a bunch of old ducks that are retired, 70, 80 years old. These people are all, none of them under 70, I'm sure. And I go in there, I'm about 52 years old, and they look at me like I'm a kid. And immediately they got me running errands and doing things for them. So they organized this church, and I really got buggered into this. And we became charter members, the first 50 people on the rolls, you know. So I, out there, we had our first classes in a schoolroom. I'd go out Sunday morning, help them set up their altar and do the ushering and, you know, do all the legwork for these old codgers. And finally, the synod bought them a building, and they bought a citrus grove and cut down some of the trees and built a building that was supposed to be our recreation hall eventually, but we had moved in there for our church services. By this time, the place is expanding, so little Caesar here, by this time, they came around and I had a battle with them on this. They wanted me to stand for ordination as an elder, and I resisted this with all 4 feet, but they overcame me. I got pressured. Try to keep peace in the family, so I was ordained the elder, which is one of these people that's supposed to help take care of the spiritual needs of the flock, you know. Well, the next year I'm president of the Bloomin' Church, and for 3 years I'm president, and I'm doing everything in that church, and they decide they want to build a church, and these old ducks are all retired, and I said, well, go get one of these fundraising agencies to do it, but those old Dutchmen don't want that. You know who they picked on to raise the money? Yeah. So I was already getting the money for the current expenses. So I raised for that church. Now, this is 25 years ago, I want you to know. I raised $350,000 for that church, and they never had a mortgage on the church. It's a rummy does this stuff. Believe me, boy, they had visitors coming from the north. They all got tapped. Everybody got tapped. And that money came in, and they never had a mortgage. I told that preacher, I says, don't ever talk to this congregation about money. I'll do the pitching for the dough. You just keep quiet. You can make one sermon a year on, as far as money is concerned, and don't you talk about any money for building a church. If they're going to get mad at somebody, let them get mad at me. So we got the church built. So after the church is built, I could stand here and tell you for a week about these spirits and that deal. I wouldn't do it again for $7 million, but I wouldn't take that much for the experience, believe me. Anyway, that's the way a woman will do. I go into some workplace, I wind up sales manager. Why is this? I come to AA and I own it. There's a guy over in Tampa, he was a funny guy, I used to get a kick out of him, Big John. He had a sense of humor, great big Irishman. And his wife was very active in Al-Anon. She's always Al-Anoning all over the place, you know. And he gets so damn disgusted with her and her Al-Anon activities. And finally he came into AA. He came over to my group in St. Pete one time, and he's talking about his wife. He says, Clarence owns AA, and his wife there is the president. But this is the way it is. Well, this is what an alcoholic does. We never sit. A real rummy don't ever sit in the back seat. He's got to be out there running. Or if he don't, somebody pushes him out there and makes him run. We are the kind of people that do things. We are doers. We do things. Naturally, we're going to make mistakes. Because people that don't make mistakes never do anything. But the people that make mistakes people do something, they're going to make mistakes. You can't help it. But we learn from them. We learn from the expense of other people, too. I don't have to learn everything the hard way. I've learned a lot of things from other people's experience, and I still do. We have a marvelous program. Having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. Did you get that word, alcoholic? One of the big stumbling blocks in our fellowship today is a lot of people are trying to be everything to everybody. And we just are not equipped to do that. The name of our book is Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says so on the cover. And very plainly, in plain English, that says Alcoholics Anonymous. See that? That does not say Dopes Anonymous. That does not say Fatsos Anonymous. That does not say Nose Pickers Anonymous. It says Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have all we can pray over to take care of alcoholics, and that's our ministry. Now, there are places and facilities for these other people, and that's where they should be directed. But when people come here, we are to qualify them as alcoholics. And if they are alcoholics, we have something for them, and they have something for us. But a lot of these other people, all they have for us is grief. And they'll tear our program apart and tear our AA apart. And that is happening in a lot of places, and don't you think it isn't. Kiddos, we get around a lot of places in this country and out of this country, and we see AA in all of its different dimensions. And we walk into a town, it don't take us very long to find out what's going on and what kind of a tempo that AA has in that town. All you have to do is sit in a meeting and listen for a while. And some of the stuff I hear, I do not like. It shakes me up. Tell you why. We have a very simple program for alcoholics. And alcoholics, we have a ministry in alcoholics, you and I. You and I are the only people, history has proven this, that have the capacity to steer the alcoholic on the path where he's going to get well and stay that well and get useful. Nobody else can do that. I try to tell you how old this thing of alcoholism is and the different things have been tried. I think I told someone the other night, I have a book this thick at home about the history of alcoholism, written in early 1800s, this book. And it tells about the different things, for centuries past, what people did to try to modify the actions and the drinking of alcoholics, and they all failed. Why? We have the combination. And the only way we succeed is in partnership with our new manager. And I don't say you won't stay dry without that, but you're not going to have much fun doing it. You're always going to be wondering what's going to happen next. I don't wonder what's going to happen next. Everything's going to be all right. Every day's Christmas. I have a good life. Grace has a good life. We have a lot of good friends. One time in my life, I didn't have a friend in the world. Not a friend. I had one cousin that would still regard me. She was all right. We were kids together, but she was the only person I could ever say that had any regard for me at all at one time in my life. Today, I can go any place in the country and out of the country, and I have friends. I said something the other night to somebody. I could make a round-the-world tour. It wouldn't cost me 5 cents. I go and visit you for a while, and you put me up for 3 days, and I go somewhere else to your house, and so on. I believe that fish and company smell after 3 days. So I would make my visit short and sweet, and I'd be welcome when I come back. Yeah, we can do this. Before, there wasn't nobody left around me in the house, let alone have friends. You're the same way. We've had a fellowship here that's the grandest thing that ever happened in history. And it only happened a little over 40 years ago. And you and I are the chosen people. The chosen people. We're chosen for this. And since we're chosen for this, we have a responsibility. And the responsibility is working with people like ourselves. We relate to the alcoholic. We can't relate to these other people. There's differences there. people asking me around here today about drugs. Drugs? When you're talking about drugs, you've got to figure out what kind of drugs you're talking about. I say this, that there are a lot of pill heads belong here. All the difference between them, they chew their liquor instead of drink it. But there's other people that get on hard drugs. There are other facilities for them, and we don't relate to those people for the simple reason that things happen to them that don't have to happen to us, and that will happen to them. A hard drug user eventually gets into the place where he has to pay $50 to $200 a day to support his habit. Where is he going to get it? Where? He has to turn to crime. He goes and steals. The girls steal. They do shoplifting. Then they get into prostitution. It inevitably follows. It's crime, crime, crime. Those people have to be criminals. An alcoholic isn't a criminal. He's a damn petty thief. He's not a criminal. He don't go out killing anybody for a drink. He don't have to. All we have to do, if you hurt badly enough, if you don't have the price of a drink, you can go down to the... just walk through any supermarket and pick up some lotion and go through it. That'll relieve the tension for the time being. Or drink some of the vanilla extract or something. There's where I drank worse stuff than that. When I was drinking, when I was on the bum, I paid 7 cents a pint for my booze and I bought it in a wallpaper store. I would welcome vanilla extract. Don't ever try that stuff. You have to work yourself down to that. It takes seasoning. So an alcoholic, alcohol is available and it's accessible. For hard drugs, costs a lot of money. So it brings people into other things they have to do to survive. And we don't have to do that. All right. We went over the steps. Anybody have any argument or any questions about it? I told you I'd go through these steps, this program, tell you what it was today. Yes, who speak? Stand up. I didn't hear you. I take 2 days. I give them 7 steps the first day and take them through the rest of it the next day. Tell them how to live the next day. It could be. I've talked to people for 3 and 4 and 5 hours before they've ever gotten ready to go into these steps. I will not chance ruining a person's opportunity to live by rushing them. Sometimes I have to explain things. A person is so bloody screwed up, and so you have to just ease him along and get him sold on certain things. I have talked to some people 3 and 4. I've talked to some person a whole day and never took them through to the next day. You have to depend on an individual. Yes, sir. I write them down. No, I write them down. You don't write anything. I don't want you. I can't read your writing. I can only read my own. Yes, that's right. That's exactly it. That's right. You tell me which one of these you're guilty of, and I check them. See, I have it written down on a paper when you come. So I check the ones you tell me that you're selfies and you're this and that and the other thing. Yes, sir. Well, you have to disseminate what a drug addict is. As I mentioned before, I'd say there's certain people, these pill heads, that chew them, most of them belong here. But we've had them with us forever. But these people that are using those hard drugs and tossing them all that dough, there's another facility for them where they can get along much better than here, and we can't do anything for them, really. Well, I don't get new people, but if I took a new person through, I would get him, if he needs sobering up, I get him sober, and after he's sober a few days, then I take him through the steps. But I qualify him before that. I want to know what he really wants to do about it, because I'm not going to fool with him if he's in some kind of a panic and just wants to get out of a temporary problem. I'm not interested in that. But if I get a person who really wants to quit drinking, take me, I do it in a few days. Yes, sir. I have no problem with a higher power, because I don't mention him as a higher power. My higher power has a name. And the sooner that fellow learns who that higher power is, the sooner he's going to get well and quit all this this lamp posts and all this other crap. No, I don't have that problem. I'll tell you why. This man has come, or woman has come to me to get what I have. and he's going to get what I have. I don't want what he has. When he starts telling me about his God, forget it. I've got to tell him about mine. If he won't accept mine, let him go lay in bed with his God and he sweat as long as he wants to sweat. And he'll come around if he wants to do something about it. You see, when I talk to a person, I say, what are you willing to do to quit drinking forever? Here's what kills them. They tell me they're willing to do anything. He has no option to give me any argument. Because he come where I want. I don't care what he has. I've met some of the funniest people, what they, these different cults they belong to and all this crap. I went all through that myself. I went through a lot of that stuff. I was one of the guys early in my career was into spiritism. And we used to go down to his house and have spiritist meetings and get the old table jumping around and all this crap. That stuff's of the devil. He taught me how to grow a beard right in front of people. And I could do it. Believe it. I'm not kidding you. Boy, we got out of that stuff. I remember old Bill Wilson used to go nuts. He used to write messages on his chest, you know. We got scared to death of this stuff. Yes, sir. Well, they sure are guides to progress. We need some guides to progress, and these are the ones. This is what gives us progress. I don't care what people do. I've heard some of the by-goddess things that people do. And here's all I go by is what there's 200 words here, and we don't need anyone taken away. We don't need them added to it. You see what I mean? When we take these 12 steps, the way they're laid out, we take these 9 steps, our life changes. This is a life-changing program. Remember that. And this is a prescription for living. Now, let me put it, if you'll give me a few minutes, I want to give you an example. We are terminally ill people. You'll agree with that? We have a terminal illness, we all agree? We've seen people die with this stuff. They're doing it all the time. Millions have. All right. Supposing this. You get sick someday. Boy, you feel lousy. You don't know what's wrong with you. You ache here and you ache there and your stomach's upset and everything else. You got the heat and the sweats and what have you. So your wife says, go to the doctor and find out what's wrong with you. So you go down to the doctor and you go in there and he looks you over and he pulls your tongue out and looks in your ear and looks in your eyes and taps you on the chest and a few other places and he says, boy, I don't know about you. You need a thorough examination. You got to go in the hospital. So he dumps you in the hospital. Well, as I said before, you don't get one doctor in the hospital. They have a union. You get 6 of them. And they're all thumping you someplace or other. They're all specialists, see? And you're in there, and away they go. The first day, you're running down there for examination. They're taking your blood and taking everything else. And that goes on all day, and you come back. You're pretty much worn out. They do that the second day, and oh, you're getting it good then, but this time you're sore. You're all over. They have you running in place, and they have you not. They really do it to you. So finally, after 2 days of this, in comes your doctor. They haven't told you one bloody thing yet. This is all a secret between that union. So they get all the information together, I guess, and your doctor comes in, and when he walks in that room, you know that he don't have good news. Because his chin is down here somewhere, and he's looking at his shoes. See if his shoelaces are tied. And you'll say, Doc, what about it? What did you find out? What did you find out? What's wrong with me? Then you do get a shocker, because he shakes his head. Then you know it's bad news. You say, well, Doc, what is it? He says, I'm sorry, I don't like to tell you this, but you have a terminal illness. Terminal? Terminal? That's the end, isn't it? Doesn't that mean the end? Yep. You mean I'm going to die? You're going to die. Oh, Doc, I'm too young to die. I have too many responsibilities. I have family responsibilities. I have job responsibilities, business responsibilities. I'm a major domo in the lodge. I got a lot of things to do. I don't want to die now. I'm too young. Isn't there something you can do, Doc? Well, he says, I'll tell you what I can do. I'll give you a prescription. And you have this prescription filled and take it like I give it to you, and you can add some time to your life. Boy, what a relief this is. The old procrastination again. You don't have to die right now. It's some other time. See? So you're safe again. Give me that prescription, Doc. So Doc sits down and starts to scribble and scribble and scribble and scribble in all that scribbling that's peculiar to doctors. And finally he hands you the thing and says, now you take this down to the druggist and have it filled. Oh, thank you, Doc. So away you go with the prescription. You get outside the office and you've been to school and you had some smarts. So you're able to read this diagram that he's put down there. And boy, you look down there, and man, oh man, there are 12 ingredients in that prescription. And you look down there, and gee, this one down here, that stuff is sour. And I don't like sour stuff. I'm a sweet kid. I like sweet stuff. So I file that away in the blubber, see? Look down a little further, there's another thing down here that every time that I take that kind of stuff, I'm allergic to it, and it makes me itchy, and I scratch all the time. And I don't like to scratch in public, so I put that up in the blubber. So I go down a little further, here's another thing down here, that every time I take that stuff, it causes me to have gas, and I belch all over the place, and I don't like belching in people's faces, so I file that in the blubber, and away I go to the druggist, you know. So I go to the drugstore and say, Mr. Druggist, Dr. Jones says I have a terminal illness. And he gave me a prescription and says that he had some years on my life if I take this prescription. Will you please fill it for me? He says, I'll be happy to give me the prescription. Wait a minute, Doc. Pull it away from him. This item up here, this sour stuff, I don't like sour stuff. I like sweet stuff. Will you leave that out, please? He says, you mean that? Yeah. Okay, give it to me. No, wait a minute. This item down here, every time I take that stuff, it gives me the itch. And I don't like to scratch all over the place in front of people. Will you leave that out too? You don't mean that, do you? I sure do. Give it to me. No, wait a minute. There's one more item down here. This stuff down here, every time I take it, it gives me gas. And I don't like to belch in people's faces. Will you leave that out too? He said, you really don't mean that, do you? Yes, I do. All right, give it to me. So he takes the prescription and fills it according to your orders. Do you think you're going to get well? You're going to die by inches. That prescription isn't going to do you very much good because you didn't do what he ordered in the way the specialist prescribed. We have the same thing here in AA. We got a prescription with 12 ingredients. So people think they can take what they want to forget the rest of it. They told Grace that when she came in AA up in Jacksonville, Florida. That nitwit of a sponsor of hers told her that she could take what she wants and throw the rest out the window. When I met her, I said, you better jump out the window with it, kid, which isn't going to do you any good. So this is the way the cookies crumble. Here's how the cat ate the cabbage. Here it is. So to teach her the program. She's got a wonderful program. If she'd listened to that nitwit up there, she'd have... Well, I don't know what would have happened to her by now. But she had her knight in shining armor come along, you know. Well, anyway, that's the way this prescription is. Yes, sir? We got our entire program from the Oxford Movement. The Oxford Movement had 6 steps, and all we did was take their 6 steps and made 12 out of it. We figured that if an alcoholic could screw up 6 steps, they could screw up 12 much easier. Well, he's telling what the experience was of the people who come in, and they took these steps. He says, these are the steps we took, which so-and-so and so-and-so. So, we took them. He's telling how it was supposed to be taken. I don't say everybody took them that way. No. Bill didn't write that stuff. We stole it from the Oxford Movement. They stole it from somebody else. Oh yeah, the Oxford group was a life changing. It was a spiritually motivated group, and it spread all over the world. It was a very powerful fellowship, and they Frank Buckman originated the Oxford group at Oxford College in England with a bunch of college kids, and that thing caught fire. And it spread all over the world. And they had a way of getting their members. They used an inverted pyramid. What they did, they attracted outstanding names, big names, like the Firestones, the Goodyears. And they had a lot of Maharajas and heads of state and heads of government that belonged to that Oxford Movement at one time. It was a very powerful thing. And they figured that when some of these big wheels get in there, presidents of different outfits and congressmen and that, the small fry like you and I would like to get in there and rub elbows with them. So that's how they attracted their people. But they had a good program. They did a lot of good till the connivers got too busy in there, and they ruined it. A lot of good spiritual outfits have been ruined by greed. You want to watch out for that in AA too. Yes, sir.
And,
Immediately, when you ask God to remove them, He takes them away from you. They're gone. Now you've got to learn how to keep them gone, and you do that in the last three steps. Right? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, same thing. Same difference. Yes, ma'am. Well, I do. I don't want anybody messing around with my people if I'm taking them through, because there's too many screwballs around that upset everything I'm doing. When I take somebody through the steps, Grace don't even come in on it. She has her own. When she takes them through, she does it. I don't bother unless she asks me something. Yes. That's very simple. A recovered alcoholic, you're looking at one. You recover after once you take the steps. When you go through these steps, you're recovered. Until that time, you're not. When you take the medicine, you get well. This is the medicine to make us well. And you get you can unrecover. You can unrecover. Just like I think I told some people today. You take TB, tuberculosis. That's a terminal illness. But you can go to the doctor. He can give you certain prescriptions and certain rest and certain diet and one thing another. If you follow out what he does, you can add a lot of years to your life. You can recover. But if you violate it, you can unrecover and die. We've got the same thing here. You're recovered once you take the medicine. I went over these steps with people. Yes, all of this stuff would be sent to us. All of it, the whole book would be sent to us in Akron. And we'd blue pencil it, red pencil it, and send it back with our suggestions, and sometimes they'd blithely ignore it, and other times they'd take some of the suggestions. But they put in pretty well what they wanted to up there. Until that God business came, we had an awful battle on that deal, and that's why we compromised, as I understand him. Yeah, it was a composite work of a lot of people. It wasn't any one person that did this whole thing. Actually, Hank Parker's, Wilson's secretary, or Wilson's partner, I'd say Hank had more to do with the writing of this book and putting together this book than Bill did. But you never hear of Hank. I see one reference in that one book, Henry P. I never see anything else. And that guy was a powerhouse. Oh, I don't know that. This isn't necessary. I tell you the only thing that the real necessity in that whole book is chapter 5. Now, a lot of that book was written, remember, that book was written in 1938. That's a long time ago. And a lot of water's gone over the dam since that time, and we've learned a lot of things. As the book says, we will hope to learn more. And it also says you may meet some of us on your happy road to destiny and all that stuff. This was written way back in 38, and we didn't have a whole lot of experience then, see? And in New York, they had less experience where most of this was written than we had in Akron, see? But we have learned a lot of things. But when you get right down to the nitty-gritty of this whole thing, the book originally was written for this one purpose, which at least they told us this, that we put it in book form, and it would reach people where we couldn't reach by word of mouth. So figured that this book would be written, and some guy out here in Podunk out here somewhere would read the book and catch fire and start helping people. That's the purpose of the book. So that was what it was originally supposed to be. But we learned a lot of things since then. I didn't do this kind of activity with people back in those old days. It was entirely different. I made them surrender, but I didn't have the whole thing down the way I have now. Over the years, I've learned some things, as we all do as time goes by. But actually, when you get down to analyze that big book, the main issue in that book is chapter 5. That tells you the whole story. That's the whole ball of wax. Because there's where you learn how to get your life changed. That's where you make your surrender, and that's where you learn to go out and do your missionary work. Yes, sir. When did we do? I didn't start it. I hear a lot of stuff. Huh? I don't encourage that kind of stuff. Nobody accused me of that. I don't stand for that kind of nonsense at all. I'm a fundamentalist. I believe in what it says in that fifth chapter, and that's it, period. I believe in taking a person like yourself. If you need this and want it, I'll take you through this and teach you how to live. That's my job, and that's my mission here. But all this stuff that they've been putting into AA nowadays, forget it. So I say you better be very careful what intrusions are coming into our fellowship, because some of them are not the best things for us. Yes.
Yes, sir. You have asked a very pointed question, and it is a good one. And I'll tell you this, you can't choose a sponsor. A sponsor should choose you. They've got that ass backwards, too. Yes, sir. You did what?
I said, what do you say to somebody that's been around for a little while and nobody's chosen him yet?
Nobody approaches him?
Nobody has chosen him as a sponsoree.
They haven't picked him?
Yeah.
There's something wrong with the setup in your group. The thing is, here's what it originally was meant to do, and we did this for a long time. But as I say, a lot of things change. You couldn't walk into one of the meetings where I used to go. In Cleveland, Ohio, you could not walk into a meeting. Nobody knew where they were in the first place. It was none of their business in the second place. And we didn't have all this crying about anonymity in the third place because we didn't need it. But you couldn't walk into a meeting. Someone had to bring you. Now, if I got your name, I'd go get in touch with you or get in touch with your wife and then get in touch with you, whatever. I would get you prepared for a meeting, and when you're ready for a meeting, I'd take you to a meeting. And then you'd join that group, and I'm your sponsor. I teach you the program. People come in now, and this is absolutely the most asinine thing, one of the most asinine. Some guy will come in and say, get yourself a sponsor. How can that guy pick a sponsor? He's going to pick another dingbat like himself. He ain't going to get somebody that's going to be hard on him, that's going to teach him. He'll meet another flake. This is that. He doesn't know how to pick a sponsor. How is he going to do it? The poor guy's coming in there scared to death and defeated and in all kinds of trouble. He should pick out some guy to sponsor him. You might pick a Chinaman that don't even talk his language. Who knows? It's silly. Somebody, when someone comes into your group meeting, somebody should nail that person and talk to them. See if they belong anywhere. If they don't, take them in charge. And if you don't have the time to sponsor them, find somebody for him. That's our cue. That's our job. This thing, the way people wander in and out of AA today, it's ridiculous. They yammer and squawk and squall about anonymity. Don't tell anybody you belong. But they open the meeting, let any dingbat walk in there. He can sit there and look the crowd over and find out who has a nuisance value, you know? It's crazy. Who is... Oh, you... What? Yes, sir. I hope she was good and ugly. But you're a handsome guy. But no, here's the thing. Some people cannot, being the emotional kind of people we are, a whole lot of people cannot do this, sponsoring crossways. A man can't sponsor women or women men because of an emotional situation. But there are some people who can do that. They keep their eye on the spiritual instead of on the physical. And this is a problem that a lot of people have. They do all their spiritual work below their belt. And this can be very... But some people can rise above that, and of course, if some man hadn't, I tell you that frankly, I'm the guy that brought women into AA. Bill Wilson and Doc Smith wanted nothing to do with female AAs, female alcoholics. They had thumbs down. There was an awful double standard in those days, but I'm the guy that brought the first gals in. And it never hurt me, and I don't think I hurt any of them, and some of them managed to recover and still going around and doing all right. But yeah, there's a very strong problem, very acute problem there that you can get mixed up in this girl-boy stuff, and that very often happens. In fact, a lot of people walk into AA looking for stuff like that. I'll never forget old Pop Green in Washington, D.C. Old man Green, he used to be, Bill Green was his name, he used to be the major domo of that club, and everyone that came to that club, he interviewed them. Find out if they belong there, if they're alcoholics or what they're looking for. So this fellow Bob Rathke, he and I run around every once in a while, and we just came back from a trip up through Virginia and Maryland and up through there. And when he came in 25 years ago, Bill interviewed him, and he was like this. Poor old Bob was in a bad shape, coming off an awful drunk, and he wanted help. So Bill talked it to him and qualified him enough and knew that he's looking for something. So he gives him some fatherly advice. Old Bill Green was an older man. He was a real old guy. He was 70 years old. And he says to Bob, he says, Bob, he says, I want to tell you something. Lots of people come to this club. He says, some of these men are coming here to get sobriety. And some of these women are coming here to get sobriety. There are some men coming here to get women. There are some women coming here to get men.
He says, there's some men coming here to get men, and there's some women coming here to get women. He says, be careful who you associate with here, because you'll meet all kinds. I can't hear you, dear. Come on up front where we can look at you. You look pretty from up here. I can't hear. I can't hear a word you say. Her sponsor is a man? Well, that's all right. Well, I think you should go through the steps and have something to carry. You have a message to carry. There is no exact time limit to it, but it depends on what you have to give away. See, we are there to carry a message. I told you the other night, I talked about my efforts to get a message. It took me 7 months to get a message. Because the evidence of that is it took me 7 months to sell my first person the idea, this idea, after talking to hundreds of people. But it depends. If you've gone through this program, if this person's gone through this steps, and he is spiritually oriented, that's the time he can go out and sponsor. He may not, I think that any person starting out and doing 12-step work should go with someone else who's experienced. Because there's things to learn about 12-step work. I think it's a matter of education. I don't think any person ought to go on a 12-step call alone. I don't care if you're a man or a woman, you should go double. You can get an awful lot of problems going by yourself in AA things. Believe me, you can. Don't ask me, I'll tell you. Yes. Good for you. Two resentments and a pot of coffee and we start a new group. It just says what? Well, I don't think you should resent that. I think there's a lot of literature that comes in AA meetings in some places I've seen that are better than some of that stuff that we have. Really. Fact of the matter, let me tell you this. I'm a little bit prejudiced, I must agree. We all have prejudices. I think we'd be dead if we didn't. But some time ago, our delegate, he's a pretty good guy. He's the smartest one we ever had. He's the only one that had any sense. And this guy came to me one day. He says, Clarence, I'm about to go to New York. He says, do you have any suggestions on what I might throw on the table up there? I said, yeah. I said, find out for me who writes this literature. It's called literature. He says, what's the matter with it? I said, boy, I'm telling you, whoever writes this stuff must be having nightmares. I said, some of this stuff is awful. He said, like, for instance, he says, we've got a suitcase full of it there. Pull out your sponsorship pamphlet. I want to show you something. So he pulls it out, and I read on this pamphlet. This comes out of New York. This is Mecca talking. It's telling about what a sponsor should or shouldn't do. Now remember, this is a spiritually oriented program that's based on God, and He's the one that does the changing of our lives. It says there, a good sponsor who is an atheist. Now get that one. How do you like them apples? How can a good sponsor be an atheist? A good sponsor who is an atheist will not try to convert people to atheism, neither will a person try to convert an atheist into any other belief. Now what kind of stuff is that to put on an AA pamphlet? Somebody don't know their hind end from third base about what this program is, or they never put anything to that in a pamphlet. Don't get me started on that stuff. Yes, sir. If you want to get in touch with Grace or I about your steps, yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, you'd have to phone us and tell us and we'd see if we are going to be in town. Don't call us this year, though, because we got so many commitments. I've been on the road now for about 5 or 6 weeks. If I get a new person, I usually turn them over to somebody I've sponsored. Now, we get people that have been around AA with various results, and they're not happy, they're miserable. And they come down and we teach them the program like I just went over. This is what we do with them. Well, you're not supposed to. You give them to somebody else. You can't sponsor all those people. You can't. You go crazy. You know, you turn them over to somebody else. Keep them all busy. Yes, ma'am. I don't think a thing of it. They shouldn't have. They should have one sponsor.
Wow.
I don't want anybody screwing up the people I'm sponsoring. I got a way of doing it, and I don't want anybody running them off the track. One sponsor, that's it. Yes, sir. Well, there are some good clubs and there are some not so good clubs. We had a good club in our town. They threw us out of it. So, I don't know. Clubs are all right in their way, but here's what's generally, if they use them properly, but a lot of them don't. A lot of them turn out to be a bum's hangout and a loafer's retreat, and they're a dating society and stuff like that, and they, if they're run properly, there are some good ones around the country, but a lot of them leave a lot to be desired. I don't think we need them so badly as probably once we did, because people can find things to do with their time without hanging around a club all the time. But some people want them, that's their option. They can have them if they want. Personally, I don't belong to any of them. Thank you. Well, anybody else want to start a fight? That's what we call unity. Yes, ma'am, you want to fight? How many people should sponsor a person at one time? Oh, I don't think you can handle more than one at a time. It takes an awful lot of time, and it takes a lot of praying, it takes a lot of work to handle a person to get his life turned around. I don't think you can. Yes. Hopefully, you make a lifelong commitment to a person. Hopefully. I have taken people to their program, and they have lived for many, 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 many years, and we were the closest of friends. I have also taken people two steps years and years ago who have nothing to do with me. A bunch of them voted me out of AA one time. That's when we had our first unity in Cleveland. We split in three groups, not two. No, I think you have a lifelong commitment and friendship with a person. You ought to have.
You just got to mention that you should only have one sponsor at a time. And you mean to say you've only sponsored one person and kept them all your life?
No, I don't keep them, but you keep an association with people.
Only one?
One person?
You said you can sponsor only one person at a time.
I can only sponsor, they're asking me, we're talking about introducing them to the program and becoming their teacher. Yeah, you can't go ahead. We had to do otherwise one time. When they were coming in so fast, we had to teach them in classes. But it isn't necessary to do that now. There's plenty of people here that should be sponsoring someone. So everybody should be busy with somebody. But at one time when we only had a limited number of people there, and we were getting hundreds and hundreds of inquiries every week, we had to do something to absorb them. That's why we got those meetings going on, those training meetings we call them, where these men would come up to us and we'd teach them 100, 100, 200 people in a group there. So we don't have to do that anymore. There's plenty of people here who ought to be busy sponsoring somebody, teaching someone. It's good for you as well as it is for the other person. Yes, ma'am.
Clarence, I think you misunderstood me. You said that you should only sponsor one person at a time.
Yeah.
And it should be a lifelong relationship that some of them just like, you know what? Well, what you mean is guide them through the steps. Teach them through the steps one person at a time.
Right.
And then go on maybe to another. In other words, you can sponsor more than one person.
That's right. Because that person you're sponsoring has more bloody problems that you've got to help him with. Yes, who is over here? Yes, ma'am.
I don't have a question.
No, we are obliged to let people know. We are the only people that can let them know. Like I told you, Grace does. She tells everybody. If we go hiding putting our candle under a bushel, nobody sees it. We got to go out and tell people. And there's plenty of people to be told. And you don't have to run to the jails and the nut houses to do it. Your prospects are in your own group. Your prospects are your next door neighbor. The prospects are the people you work with. These, they're all around. The prospects you have sit next door to in church might be your own preacher. They're everywhere. So these are the people we look for. You don't have to look in the gutters for these people. They're all in their own gutters. All right, we got to cut this off. He's pulling on my coat here. The rent's due. So Something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I'm willing to stay till tomorrow, but some don't.
Your wife's a record.
I know she did. You listen to her, I don't. Anybody else got one question before we close? Because we're going to close it up. Well, anyway, it's been great being with you and visiting. We've enjoyed our trip here. We've enjoyed meeting you all. And I hope some of you come down to visit us sometime in Florida. A lot of you have our flyers there for our retreat Labor Day. Come on down. If you come, fly into Orlando and let us know when and what your flight number is, and someone will meet you there and take you to the retreat grounds. And you'll enjoy it. Thank you.